Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World program. Donald Trump said that he'll pull his country out of the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces, or INF, treaty. The president has accused Moscow of violation of the treaty by developing an advanced cruise missile system, which is an accusation Moscow has denied. In fact, Moscow states that a U.S. missile defense system deployed in Eastern Europe against a potential Iranian threat can be adapted to fire medium-range offensive missiles at Russia. The U.S. Secretary of State John Bolton recently seems to be trying to cancel the treaty, which he has called unilateral disarmament. Now, any move to pull the US out of this treaty will likely face stiff opposition from some in the White House, but may still happen. And if it does, it'll almost certainly start a new arms race. To add petrol to the fire, the UK's Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson said that the UK stands absolutely resolute with the US in this issue. Joining me in this program to comment on this incendiary situation is Dr. Tara McCormack, lecturer in politics and international relations at the University of Leicester. Hello, Tara. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
How serious is this? I mean, will opposition within the American government sort of put calm down John Bolton's call for the US quitting at the INF? What do you think?
Well, I would say that this probably will happen.
Wow.
I think John Bolton has been pretty keen on withdrawing from this treaty for quite a while.
Mm.
But I do want to say as well that, much as we want to give Trump a good kicking, as it were, in terms of criticizing him, America, this is not the first arms control treaty that America has pulled out of. So in 2003 or 4, I think it's 2003, Bush pulled out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty, explicitly said relations, of course, were very different at that point. He very explicitly said this has nothing to do with Russia. This is to do with Iran. And in fact, you know, Russia and America are getting closer and closer in terms of cooperation, etc. Now, that was the line from the States, but certainly within Russia, the effect was quite serious of this withdrawal from the ABM. And, you know, most recently, was it last year? No, earlier on in this year. I think so many things are happening, it's difficult to keep track. When Putin announced the Russian government's, you know, new nuclear program and so on, what was very much ignored in a lot of our coverage was that this had been a long-term development. So this has form as well. So a ballistic missile treaty, it wanted to place missile technology in Europe, which has now mostly happened in Romania and Poland, I think. And in response, Russia also said, well, okay, we've got these new missiles, which are going to counter that threat. I don't think that this will be changed. However, and I think it's a terrible shame, and, you know, when we go on in the UK and in Europe and America about overturning the liberal rules-based international order, as especially our government loves to say, what's largely ignored is these kind of massive, very, very important and detrimental acts by America, for example, pulling out of arms control treaties. But having said all that, I don't think it's quite back to the early 80s either.
Okay, let's take a short break here and carry on in a moment.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World program. My name is John Harrison. Today I'm talking to Dr. Tara McCormack, lecturer in politics and international relations at the University of Leicester in the UK, about the US's declared intention to pull out of the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Force, or INF, treaty. Now, Tara, could you please explain to us, people who aren't in the know, really, there is this term in international relations called the security dilemma, I've noticed this term coming up again and again in literature about arms races, and as we seem to be on the verge of another one or a continuation of an already existing one that perhaps hasn't been written about very much. Could you please fill us in and just give us an understanding of that very briefly? What is a security dilemma? Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. So this is a kind of fairly fundamental concept in security studies, which I one of the things that I teach. Yeah. And it's often associated with what's called the realist approach to international relations. And the security dilemma basically portrays in the international realm. The international realm is one in which there's no overarching government, which is the case in principle.
Yeah.
And states are fearful and have to look out for their own kind of safety and self-defense. They have no other option.
Yep.
So for realists, it's not really about whether states are good or bad. I mean, you know, I'm talking very broad brush here. The context in which states exist leads them to have to take measures to defend themselves. Now, whilst they themselves are doing things perfectly for sort of innocent, as it were, defensive reasons, of course, the neighbouring state will see state A tooling up, even though the state A may be doing this entirely for defensive purposes, and say, oh, goodness me, we'd need to get some of those. What is state A doing? Will it attack us? So I think it was Mearsheimer, the idea of the tragedy of, you know, great power politics, that it is not that anyone actually has actively belligerent intentions, but because we can never really be certain, and the context, you know, that states are permanently in a fearful state, and their actions to protect themselves will make their neighbouring states or other states think that they be attacked. So that is the kind of essence of the security dilemma.
And once it started, it's very difficult to stop, I gather. You know, once that spiral of competition has started, it's almost impossible to stop, I suppose, come a war.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't, you know, it wouldn't necessarily lead to war, but certainly it's very it's very difficult to leave this kind of situation of fear and mistrust.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is really important. You just said this: a situation of fear and mistrust almost seems to be then essential for the existence of this thing, of this spiral of arms purchase, arms development, and so on, to use against a potential enemy in a situation of anarchy, international anarchy, under a realist system. Now, that means that this information war, you know, this spreading of, I guess, misinformation on perhaps both sides, where both sides do not trust each other. Is that then an essential part of this security dilemma situation?
I mean, I'm not really... It would be, absolutely, if you were looking at this in quite kind of theoretical, maybe more abstract terms. I mean, I do not... I personally would not particularly apply that discussion, although it's a really, really interesting and, you know, discussion about international relations. I wouldn't particularly characterize what is happening now between, you know, the sort of, I don't know, what we see kind of semi-new Cold War, or Dmitry Trenin of the Moscow Carnegie Center has termed sort of the hybrid war. We're certainly in a situation of escalating tensions, but I don't know that I would really apply the idea of the security dilemma. There seems to be more conscious decisions, say, on America's, you know, from America to move away from, well, first of all, the anti-ballistic missile treaty and the INF. And I'm skeptical of the idea. It's because America genuinely feels threatened as such by...
Okay. May I ask you, and I'm getting from what you're saying, Tara, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that you feel it's more kind of America doing its thing rather than the other side sort of instigating this. But if that is the case, how do the words exceptionalism and revisionism fit into this dialogue? I'm thinking about American exceptionalism and what Russia is accused of being a revisionist state quite often.
I mean, Russia is not a revisionist state, in my opinion. It is not a revisionist state. I think Russia is a very defensive state. You know, Russia spends on defense, or in quotes, defense, I want to put that, you know, based more or less what France or Britain spends a year, you know, sort of $50 to $60 billion a year, thereabouts, whereas NATO as a whole spends $900 billion, you know, over $600 billion of that is American spending. You know, make no mistake, you know, the American kind of arsenal and military might is that which has never been seen before in the globe. You know, China has China's right. 300 nuclear missiles compared to American 1,900, which Russia and America have a parity of nuclear missiles, but China has about 300, you know, the same number as Britain. So, yeah, I wouldn't quite take this idea of the security dilemma would imply a bit more parity of power. I would understand this more as an American attempt, I think, to maintain kind of dominance. Preeminent, you know, kind of dominance in the international sphere. And I think also in the context of, in the kind of non-military sphere of America losing influence, you know, kind of rows mm-hmm. with Europe, a lot of influence lost in Syria, which is basically being sorted out now by Turkey, Russia, Iran. You know, so I think this is another slight current cliche of international relations, but we're definitely seeing shifts in the kind of world power. So I would look at that. I would look at the sort of military discussion as well in that context, rather than in very kind of slightly abstract idea of the security dilemma. You know, make no mistake, America is not threatened.
Right. So we're not about to see an all out for our arms race as we had during the Cold War. We're not about to see, you know, a third of our Russia's GDP put into development of arms.
I would be very surprised. But one thing, of course, that weapons, these kind of weapons and developments do matter for, and this is not necessarily understandable in terms of the security dilemma, but there's a lot of prestige at stake as well.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult in this context for countries as well not to respond in some way, because they will be under domestic pressure, you know, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you're threatening my ego, man, you know, like, back off, yeah.
Russia, as with every country, the Russian government is made up of a number of groups, interest groups, you know, just as in the UK, pushing for various things and different lines of policy, you know, so we have a terrible view in Britain that, you know, the Russian state, they're sort of, and they're dreadful cartoons, even shocking that they can be, mm-hmm. you know, kind of Putin sitting like an octopus, controlling everything. But of course, that's not the reality of the Russian state any more than it's the reality of the British or American state. You know, so it's not that simple either, because there will be struggles over policy and how to respond. And, you know, groups within Russia, say, who want to take a far more hawkish line on, in response to the West, whereas, for example, you know, other groups will want to be more conciliatory. So it's also, it's very difficult to tell, because much of it is unknown at the moment. How will this pan out? You know, which groups will end up being decisive in terms of policy and so on?
Well, I've got to finish the program, unfortunately, but wow, fascinating talking to you. I mean, thank you very much for that perspective. I think listeners will agree with me, it's really important perhaps at the moment to take a step back and look at the whole situation, the global situation, in a mature way. Otherwise, if you're anything like me, you think, well, it's just really happening and we're going to have another Cold War, you know.
I'm with you there. I'm old enough, you know, I was born during the first Cold War, and the thought of another one is just so frankly mind-bogglingly horrendous.
Tara McCormack, lecturer in politics and international relations at the University of Leicester. And thank you very much, listeners, for being with us today. Tune in again next week. Goodbye. Thank you.